Hey guys, it's Sonia here. Hello, hello. Welcome and thank you for joining me on this overcast, wintry Saturday in February. We are jumping back into the four-part series, as I just showed you three fingers, the four-part series that I started on episode 207. So that was part one. And if you haven't heard it, you're going to want to take a quick listen to it because it sets the foundation of what's to come. It sets the foundation that the storyline I use is completely fictional. I mean, it's somebody's story, it's not my story, and I've weaved bits and pieces in to make it so you can identify with it that much more. So we're literally picking up where we left off. I wanted to keep the next three episodes shorter, but keep in mind, I have some heart and hearts in here, so it's not going to be the next consecutive episodes, right? There's going to be some heart to hearts come up next. I believe episode 209 and 210 are heart to hearts, and then you'll probably get another part of this service back up. So you're definitely going to want to subscribe, and for all of my current subscribers, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm still on a bit of a high. It's been a couple weeks now, and because of you, these podcasts that I do have ranked number 34. I've ranked number 34 for women podcasters in Canada. Ooh, let me say that again because my throat chakra got a little excited there. I've ranked number 34 for female podcasters in Canada. Ooh, and that is many thanks to all of you chiming in, leaving reviews. And if you haven't done so already, pause where you're at. Go to your favorite listening platform, which is probably the one that you're listening to now. Just go back a couple of times and get your review done now so you don't forget to get it done at the end. Because normally we're so busy hustling and bustling, but take a fraction of time right now. Get it done. Get it done. You might be the first on that platform. You might be the seventh. You might be the 50th. It's hard to say because it's all scattered, right? So today, this is part two, as I mentioned. If you picked up with episode 207, this is just so happens to seem like it is falling in chronological order, part two, episode 208, but that won't necessarily be the case as we continue on with parts three and four. So today we're talking about where and how to commit. So, just to bring you back, I just want to go back to my notes here. We talked about defining your operating principles. That was what we discussed and defined in episode 207. And now we're going to move forward and talk about commitments that you can make to habits that will fuel you. And I'm going to share some of my personal commitments that I'm on in this particular season. There's Chopper saying hello. Making sure that we're safe here. I will be weaving in some of my particular habits that I've committed to that you can maybe steal, borrow until you find your own. Or maybe you've got your own that are just as compelling or even better. These need to fit who you are. So remember, the storyline that I used has to do with somebody working at Pixar and Walt Disney. So follow along with this creative story as you learn a lesson or two. Ready? Let's get started. So, now that you know that you are not ruining your life, you are not running your life either. So, you're not ruining your life and you're not running your life, your habits are. On the back end of Pixar's Inside Out, a great movie, by the way, if you haven't seen it. It's one of my favorites when it talks about emotions. Trying to explain how the brain works is what's on the backside. That's exactly what Inside Out is all about. An article reminded us what scientists have been saying for years. Never mind the five characters that were controlling your thoughts in the movie or barely controlling them, what seems like in real life, but it is the unconscious that is really the change. Without thinking about it, you're going through your day making decisions and acting on the stimulus of the drops of fruit that are right in front of you. Easy picking fruit. You might believe that you're in control, but it's really just the muscle memory of your mind. That muscle memory is searching for how you've previously handled a situation or a scenario that looks very similar to the one that you're in, to the season that you're replicating, to that piece of advice or evidence that looks and feels so very familiar. See, if you don't have, if you haven't done any work yet to understand what habits are and how important they are to get a handle on things, you really need to dive in. There's no other way of saying it. You really need to dive in. So let me say that again. If you haven't done any work yet to understand what habits are and why they're important to getting a handle on yourself, a handle on the direction that you want your life to be in, you're going to want to start there. That is your starting point. Read The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg as the first step. In the book, Charles breaks down how in life we are triggered by events. And at some point in our day, we have a cue that sets off an action. So perhaps a cue, and this could be my cue, putting in my coffee and bringing my coffee back and rinsing my cup is a cue for me to put my English muffin in the toast or in the toaster. That is my cue, or my cue to have breakfast, whatever that might be. When I get up in the morning and go to the bathroom first thing, that is my cue to brush my teeth, hand in hand. It doesn't matter how early it is, that's my cue. Going to the bathroom early in the morning, brushing my teeth. You have these cues, these habits that are second nature. But if you don't know what they are, you're going to have a hard time moving forward. So your first step is to read that book, The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. Doug Hig, Duhigg. H-I-G-G. How to get that right? Double check. Charles Duhigg, Duhigg. And it's called The Power of Habit. I have it written down. I wanted to just make sure here. So remember what I just said. At some point, a cue will set off an action. The reaction is our routine. Our routine is which procedures follow a sensation, or which procedures feel like satisfaction, which procedures feel like a reward, if you will. They're all different. You see, that's the loop. Cue, routine, reward. Cue, routine, reward. Sometimes a good routine, sometimes a bad routine. Primarily subconscious. You are doing this on autopilot, my friend. You're likely not even aware of it unless you primarily stop to think about it, like I'm doing right now. The fact that I'm doing this is making, and you're listening to this is making you think twice about what those habits are, or maybe are not, or what you think they are. In the pursuit of turning bad, subconscious, subconscious, unconscious, or subconscious, however you say it, it means the same thing. So, unconscious habits. In the pursuit of turning bad, unconscious habits into good, conscious habits, identifying the trigger is the first step. What is it that sets your actions into motion? Duhigg did experiments that showed there were basically five prompts that consistently provoke your routine. And they've been helpful in my experience. They have been very helpful as I try to navigate where my triggers exist and at least understanding the cues and the bad habit. These five triggers: location, time, other people, emotional state, and untimely preceding action. Let me say that again, the untimely, immediately preceding action. So, like feedback, something that happened spur of the moment where you haven't had a chance to adjust yet. That's what I meant. originally. And sometimes it could be your emotional state that happens. You could be on a high from excitement of something that may happen, and then your immediate feedback to that, your immediate trigger to that is almost like a sugar crash. That is what happens immediately preceding the action. So that too is a trigger. So let me say them again. Location, time, emotional state, other people, and anything that is preceding the action. So if you are neurodivergent, if you are fighting any kind of chronic illness, these are hugely important to you, as well as the other triggers that you've identified. You're going to want to lean in and see where or how these have an impact on you. Okay. Because when I first was going over the information, when I was first digging in, when I was first learning and deciding to make this into a four-part series, it wasn't the first time I've looked into my habits. I actually offer a habit tracker for all my clients. I put it in my Getting Started book, and it's also in my quarterly planner. It's something I talk about quite often. So I'm not new to this, but I still learned something new when I dug into this a little bit deeper this time around. And that's what happens, right? We lessons show up at the right time. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. So I turned these prompts that we're going to talk about into an exercise to list the times I wish I'd made better decisions. And I've attempted to connect the dots to find consistent patterns. So I'm going to share with you some examples. These are not all mine. Full disclosure, some of these may have come from some of the books I've put together, some of the people I've interviewed, some of the clients. But everything's been messed up and mixed up, so you would have no idea who. But as location goes, for that first one, let's talk about location. Are there places that elicit a mindset change? The beach. Who else go to the beach? Okay, so for me, it's the beach. And when I have three kids under three, pulling into a driveway was the cue I needed for feeling like I needed a glass of wine. Truth be told, that one's mine. I'll own it. I felt like I needed a glass of wine. It was one of the first things I would pour at dinner. It would last me all night into bedtime and tucking in and reading stories, but it was one of the first things I felt like I needed. Having the crying humans that needed and wanted my attention when I had so little to give at this time. I was in my mid-20s. I was tired. I was exhausted, and life hadn't even started yet. So a mama was going to have the same feelings of these expressions. Any kind of mom would feel something the same. So location, there's a trigger. There's a different book I read that they would put their hands on the door for a 5 second count every time they walked into a room and every time they left a room to set the stage, to change the energy. And I thought that was really cool. Like, honestly, I use it all the time now that I know, right? So location is one. Let's talk about time. For 25 years, I worked in offices. I worked in corporate Canada, and there were snacks all over the place. Filing cabinets near my desk in a conference room at 3 p.m. or sometimes as early as 11 a.m. You could go meet at the water cooler, have a glass of water, and have something to drink. I could be on the best eating program of my life, yet like a zombie, those particular times a day, I remember when I was in my 20s, this happened more so. I'd find myself going where others were. I would find myself going towards the conference room, going towards the lunchroom, going towards that water cooler. So for me, that time of day said precedent. The same thing when my caffeine would crash in the afternoon. And I know that's a common one for a lot of my clients. Another common one for my clients that might be able to relate to this, if you're listening, is if you're on a weight loss journey and you share with me that you don't eat much, but you eat once you start eating at the end of the day, you just can't stop. That's when you binge. There's something about a certain time of day where it's almost like hats off, you can do what you need to do. You know who you are, you know exactly who you are. Okay, this third one, emotional state. When I'm feeling insecure, I turn to humor. Good news, I'm really funny. Bad news, deploying my humor when I feel threatened in a scenario is a thinly veiled attempt at using one of my strengths to overcome anything, something, anything. I perceive it as a weakness at the expense of others. So when you're in an emotional state, a highly emotional state, do you turn to humor, sarcasm? Do you withdraw? What is your trigger for that action? Other people, we all have fun with this one, but other people is a trigger. We all have certain people who can set us off, even if we just think of them. I've had bosses, I've had clients where I've given a refund within the first day because it wasn't alignment. Now, thank goodness that's only happened once. But other people can be a trigger. Other people can just fit at the wrong time, the wrong place, the wrong emotional state, and suddenly they're a trigger. And then we talked about this one at the beginning. Anything that happens immediately preceding the action. So as I'm fighting with my chronic illness these days, I've noticed more and more about what takes my energy and brings me very elevated. And when I'm quite elevated, I crash. Even if it's just a matter of anticipating feeling a certain way, I crash. And not that I'm not able to do anything, but I'm not really able to do much because I've crashed and I need to rest before I can do much. So I've learned that at trade shows, I've learned that at different events. Feedback is a thing. Your body is going to give you the best kind of feedback that's possible. There is no better feedback, and nobody else knows your body as well as you do. So if you're getting some sort of sacral nudge, an aha moment, lean into that. Pay attention to that. Even if you're a generator and you're supposed to wait 24, or like an emotional generator like I am, and you're supposed to wait 24 hours, if you get some sort of immediate nudge, something that lights you up or takes your light and dims it altogether, that is something to be aware of, right? For me, it could have been my partner that triggered me preceding an action, giving me a different reaction or result or conversation or something different than I would have expected. Perhaps an employee, somebody that works for you, or a customer form. Oh my gosh, how many times have you received some sort of negative feedback where a polite rendition would have worked just fine? Other people don't know your scenario, right? So anything that happens immediately preceding the action, as much as we need this feedback so we can adapt and grow, your initial response, my initial response to hearing that feedback could set me off, could set you off, right? Especially if you're neurodivergent and anxiety is a thing for you, and you're in corporate and they say, or you're told, let's meet on Friday and it's Monday. What's that doing? Immediately, what is that doing to you? Yeah, if you're close to pen and paper, write those answers down. I challenge you to think on that. I can tell you what that does to me. I won't take it. I can't. It unsettles me. My shoulders go up. Here's the reality. If it was bad news, they're not going to wait 4 days to call me in for a meeting. But I don't think that way. Okay. I need to get over the hurdle first of what's going on, and why is my back feeling up the wall, and why is my body responding all of these different ways before I can get comfortable with the idea that it's not something bad. And this might be you too. And if your boss says to you something like, let's wait till Friday, that could be location, time, emotional state, other people, and preceding the action. Your response to that could fall into all five of those buckets. And that too is something to be mindful of. You see, the question here, the question you really want to ask yourself is, where are you at your best? And where are you at your worst? What is it about that place, time, or other element that provokes your response? And what is it about your response that provokes a reward? Is there an alternative response that could still leave you feeling and wanting the reward? So I said I was going to share the two habits I was working on right now. and they're both measurable. And I don't have a reward yet, but I'm going to have a reward for my 21 days. And so you know by now, unless you're just catching this mini episodes, that I am a neurodivergent coach who focuses on Gen X women, and I am fighting an invisible chronic illness myself. So I have a couple of challenges. We all have something up our sleeve. And you can hear me tripping over my words because I am more excited than I wanted to be when I showed up and did this episode. And it's kind of like accepting this 21-day challenge where it has to be measurable, was really like it has to be the SMART goals. It has to fall into all of those categories. So I had two goals. A, I would track my food, and B, I would reach out to 10 people a day. 10 people over 21 days is 210 people. That's going to give me a lot of good information about my business and where I'm at right now. Tracking my food for 21 days is going to get me into the habit of doing it more and more and more. See, I don't have a reward yet for the 21 days. This is what I said, but I'm going to have to figure something out. Right now, I'm doing it to do it. My Fitness Pal, it is giving me little rewards for certain days, not for every day, but for certain days. Tomorrow, I get one. But yesterday, I had needles this week. I get nerve blocks put in my head. So, needles put in my head once a month, and they are supposed to block the pain. But my next couple of days is a little bit like a roller coaster ride. I can't anticipate how I'm going to feel or what's going on with my head. It's a crapshoot. Just never know. So, yesterday, I somehow may had the energy to send out an email newsletter and track my food. I think I did those two things. But for the life of me, I could not reach out to 10 people. So I'm like, am I done the challenge or am I not done the challenge? But then, like, am I out now? But then I went to my mind back here, way back here, and I realized throughout the week I was hitting numbers like reaching out to 13 people and 18 people. Consistently, it wasn't just 10. 10 wasn't the bare minimum. I didn't stop at 10. So, you know what? I gave myself permission to be flexible, and you need to do the same. You need to give yourself permission to be flexible when your circumstances are different, and we all have different circumstances. So, what are you going to allow? It's completely up to you. It's all up to you. What it's going to constitute receiving that reward. And for me, showing up for 21 days as best as I possibly can is going to constitute me showing up for that reward. I just don't know what it is yet. Something kept me going yesterday without it. So, is there a way to plan this? Is there a way for you to plan how you're going to show up in the area before it is in front of you? I cannot predict that, but I predict that as much as I can. I put myself in a calming state every day, do my morning meditations and my Bible app. And if I get a chance, I'll call a girlfriend in the morning. But if I don't, it's okay. I'll journal or I'll journal throughout the day, and I have a peaceful way to start my day. That helps me be in the mindset to be around other people. Okay. So before you're in front of that, those triggers, those five triggers we talked about, how can you set yourself up for success? Because that's the goal, right? Start by identifying those triggers. I have to track my triggers every month to see what works for my head, what doesn't. I am using a yellow, red, and green sticker system. And just like the traffic light, that's exactly how I'm identifying my day, right? If you start to do that and you write your triggers down beside it, you're going to learn what they are. And maybe MSG is a trigger for you too, just like it is for me and many of us out there. Once you identify your triggers, you can ask yourself if the response to those cues serve you or not. Maybe they're not serving you. Maybe that's part of the problem. If the response doesn't serve you, how do you create a new routine? How do you make that response different? What can you do to set yourself up for success ahead of time so you know you're not going to get triggered. So in an environment where you're likely going to get triggered, are you going to put your hand on that door before walking in or out of that space to take a deep breath? Maybe hold it for 5 seconds, in for five, hold for five, exhale for five, wait five, and walk in. Is that what you're going to do? Are you going to try something of the sort before you start your day? If you want to be successful at making better, smarter, quicker, concise decisions, you better have a plan for how you're going to handle it when you encounter the things that steer you off track, the things that derail you, the decisions that leave you in a place where it's hard to bend one way or another. Set yourself up for success where you will no longer believe the lies that get in your way. Friends, sending you so much love. Am I doing it right? Is that heart right? Something like that, right? There we go. Today, every day, there we go. Those watching this just saw the hearts. I'm going to practice that a little bit more. Mwah. Thank you for watching today's episode 208, part two. And today we really dove into the habits that fuel you, flipping those habits around. And do I have a habit tracker here? If you do not have your habit tracker, just because I moved, I don't know where I have. Normally I have one in my book, but I do, but I don't have a colored one in there. If you do not have your toolkit, which comes with affirmations, gratitudes, and a habit tracker, send me a quick email. Sonia Janice, so first name, last name, at gmail.com. Just say habit tracker in the subject line. Please send me my habit tracker. I would gladly send you the form to get yours. Have a great day, my beautiful friends. I'll also include that link in the show notes here. See you next time for part three. But remember, that might be in 3 or 4 episodes from now. So you're going to have to subscribe.